What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. I've decided to talk about 85% speed right now.
Oh, yeah?
How's it going?
Well, you know, there are some weirdos that listen to us on double speed.
Well, they just are like, hurry up and get to the point, you idiots.
Yeah, because, you know, they have busy lives. They can't listen to 40 minutes of content straight.
It always, it's funny to me when somebody tweets to us or takes the time to write an email.
Yeah.
Say, like, I love your podcast, but I'm really displeased with the tangents you go on.
Oh, sure.
You seem to talk about a lot of stuff that's unrelated. Can you stop doing that?
Yeah.
And I always think, I don't think Stuff You Should Know is for you, buddy.
Yeah.
If you're being driven crazy by that, then...
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Like, we would welcome you to stay.
Sure.
But the tangents are, they're part of the fabric of the show at this point.
They're the glue.
Like it or not.
I think the whole thing would be decidedly less enjoyable.
If we were just, like, vomiting
just,
facts up.
Yeah, just gross. Business-like, you know?
Yeah. Or maybe after 850 shows, we should just completely change how we do it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get started, though, we do want to thank Sam from Gypsum's Malort.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you, Sam.
We mentioned the unique liqueur, Chicago brand liqueur on our PR show.
Right, right.
Live in Chicago.
Because you tried it, like, before the show.
Yeah, well, I tried it a few times.
Oh, I gotcha.
And it's you know, as John Hodgman said, it tastes like pencil shavings and heartbreak. That's his descriptor. But Sam heard us talking about
Crown Royal.
Crown Royal.
Woo!
And was like, wait a minute. They talked about Malort, and I didn't send them anything.
Yeah. Attention all other distillers in America. You can get in on this, too.
Yeah. If the makers of Plymouth Gin
or Leopold's Gin.
Or Knob Creek or Pappy Van Winkle.
St. George's. They're a great distillery out of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Pappy Van Winkle. Wowee. That's the stuff that gets, like, hijacked. And sold for like $20,000 on the internet.
Yeah. So I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm picking it back up, bringing it back here, and throwing it again.
We're happy to drink your booze and talk about it ad nauseum.
You know what else we're happy to talk about, big boy?
What's that?
Bonza.
Yes, which you, I don't know if I was saying it wrong, but right before we press record, you said, it's not bonsai, it's bonsai. And I was like, what's the diff?
It's not bonsai.
Oh, with a Z.
Right. That okay. Means heads up.
Right, right, right.
Bonsai, or bonsai.
With an S.
Right. It basically means plant in tiny container.
Yeah, those are the cute toy trees.
Yeah.
That
Mr. Miyagi.
Are made of plastic.
It depends. Target has some. They definitely
really?
Have plastic ones.
They have
yeah,
fake.
If you search bonsai, it's one of the things that comes up immediately.
Fake trees.
I think it's called like nearly real.
Oh boy.
Or nearly natural, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, it does not look nearly natural.
It's like near beer. You ever heard people call non-alcoholic beer near beer?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny.
I used to, I probably shouldn't tell that story. So with bonsai, Chuck, we're talking, like you said, the little toy trees. And yeah, there's plenty of fake bonsai out there, but they're just kind of, It's the same thing as fake flowers, you know?
Well, it sort of flies in the face of what's special about bonsai, which is that it's a living work of art.
Right, it does. And a lot of people are like, well, that's just a weird freakish tree that you've been abusing for the last several decades.
Yeah.
Some people actually do criticize bonsai because
really?
It is, yeah, it's like docking a dog's tail or,
it's nothing like that.
but depending on how you feel about plants, it's the same thing. You're taking something that's natural and literally bending it to your will.
So there's an anti-pruning movement going on around the world?
Maybe. I don't know if I would go that far to say it. But if you are invested in bonsai, if you do appreciate bonsai, part of the whole point of bonsai is you're creating a tableau that is a living depiction of nature.
Yes.
Rather than a painting, you're creating a living version of basically a painting.
Yeah, it's sculpture, living sculpture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's even better.
Like you can make it out of sculpy clay?
You could, but then you've totally missed the point of bonsai.
Well, that'd be fun too, but.
But it's something different, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk about how to bonsai. I have to say,
Is that a verb as well?
It is now.
Oh, okay.
We're going to, Jerry's just cracking up this episode.
She's reading,
Crack. See. I got you. She is. What is the guy from Crack's name? Alfred E. Newman's like kind of.
Oh yeah. He had like this blonde-haired, counterpart.
Yeah.
Is that still around? Cause they're sort of a different thing than they used
totally.
To be.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. There's this great story behind Cracked. Like Cracked was around for, you know, decades and it just got left to languish.
Right.
And I guess some fan came along and was like, hey, I noticed like you're basically just waiting around for Cracked to die. Can I have a stab at it?
A crack at it?
I specifically didn't say that, but yes.
Yeah.
And they're like, whatever, kid, go ahead. And the guy basically resurrected Cracked in his basement.
Nice.
Brought it back from the dead, and now it's, like, huge.
Well, they just sold for a boatload of money.
Oh, yeah?
Good for them.
I hope it went to that dude who resurrected it.
I do, too.
That's great. I don't remember how we got onto Cracked.
Jerry was laughing.
Oh, she was reading Cracked.
Yeah.
That's right. So back to bonsai. Like I said, we're going to talk about how to bonsai, which, like you said, is a verb now. But let's talk about the history of it first.
Yeah, like many things in the world, and especially many things that you might associate with Japan, it started earlier in China before it made its way to Japan. And in China, it was called, well, in Japan, did you already say what it literally means? I think you did.
Yeah, it means plant in a tray.
Yeah, plant in a tray. In China, it was punsai, which means tray plant. Not too far off.
No.
And if you go all the way back to the Tang Dynasty, there is evidence, you know, on tomb paintings that they had these little pruned trees in shallow pots.
Yeah, it's just like part of the painting in the tomb. It's not like featured, it's just part of it,
yes.
Kind of depicting regular life. They're like, oh, okay, well, at least by 706 CE, that there were people doing bonsai in China.
That's right.
Or bonsai.
Yes.
Right? It may go back even further than that. There's a legend that an emperor around about 206 BCE wanted his entire empire, China, recreated in miniature in his backyard. And they suspect that it's possible that may have given rise to bonsai.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
They're like, we got to make tiny trees now because the emperor wants a toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then either through trade or through gifts, exchanges of state departments and stuff like that.
Right.
Japan does what it always did and it got its hand on something and then took it to the nth degree and perfected it.
And made it awesome.
That's what Japan does.
That's what they do. There's an ancient Japanese scroll that I found, not literally, in my backyard.
In your attic.
that I found on the internet. And it says, this is around the Kamakura period, which was 1185 to 1333. And it says, to appreciate and find pleasure in curiously curved potted trees is to love deformity, which I thought was interesting. And the article I read said it, you know, we don't know whether this is positive or negative.
Right, yeah.
I think it means positive.
Maybe the writer was passive aggressive.
Maybe. I thought it was a pretty interesting quote, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, you're training trees to be little freaks of nature, basically.
Yeah, and like a lot of other works of art at the time, it starts out with like monks and Buddhists, and then eventually it becomes like part of the rich elite, and then eventually works its way to the common folk.
Right. So by the, I think the 13th, 15th, 16th century, it had become like a pretty well established hobby in Japan. I got the impression that it wasn't necessarily thought of as an art form until the West saw it for the first time. So in the 17th century, Japan was getting really tired of Westerners trying to convert them to Christianity and basically exploiting them in unfair trade practices.
Yeah.
So they said, you know what, Westerners, get out. We are isolating ourselves. We're closing ourselves off to trade with the West, except for a few Dutch and Spaniards. And then the Chinese.
Yeah.
Everybody else go away. Mm-hmm. And they stayed like that for a couple hundred years. And I believe it was Millard Fillmore who sent Matthew Perry, Chandler Bing, over there with a squadron of Navy freighters and huge cannons and guns saying, you're going to trade with us.
He said, could you guys be any cooler? You have all kinds of cool stuff. That's my Chandler.
So Japan opened up basically at the barrel of America's guns.
Yeah, we should do a show on that. We've talked about it enough. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting, the isolationist period.
Yeah.
Like, what went on there then?
A lot of bonsai, lot of goldfish tending.
Nice.
Remember Mr. Burns' famous quote? Those sandal-wearing goldfish tenders?
I don't remember that. That's good, though. But as far as coming to the West, there were a couple of big fairs where it kind of exploded. The Paris World Exhibition of 1878 and the London Exhibition of 1909, where, you know, of course, people in the West just probably flipped for it.
Yeah.
Because it's so cool.
Yeah.
It is. Like,
oh, man, researching this, every time I would come across a new term for like a style or something, I'd go look it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd end up spending a half an hour just looking at bonsai pictures.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's really engrossing.
Yeah, I was going to be like, all right, I'm doing this.
I definitely am.
But I'm going to wait.
For what?
Old age. So like 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get into it.
Yeah, I think it's just for me, I've got too much going on right now to do, but it's going to be a great retirement pastime for me.
Yeah.
I could see myself really like spending days and days.
I can see it too.
Caring for these little guys. I like tiny things and miniatures.
Oh, you're going to love bonsai.
Yeah, like the little tiny Tabasco bottles that you get in room service and stuff like that.
Plus your...
I go crazy for it.
Your dollhouses that you've built?
My dollhouses, yeah. I don't know.
Have you ever read The Dollhouse? The Heinrich Ibsen play?
Yeah, sure.
It's great.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I guess we should talk about some of those styles then, huh?
Well, you want to take a break first?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Okay, Josh, you mentioned styles, and I did the same thing you did, buddy. I went and looked at pictures.
Yeah.
And I put little marks next to my favorite ones, like earmarked what I'm going to try and emulate in the future.
I'm very curious what if we're going to do
yeah,
the
me
same
too.
Ones.
Okay. All right. You start.
So, upright, Chokan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most formal, traditional style, where it is basically, it emulates a strong, healthy, upright growing tree.
Yeah, I love that we take this like ancient, amazing art form in the most formal style. We go, meh.
Right. Yeah.
But I agree. Didn't delight me.
And again, what you're doing is emulating nature, but you're doing it in miniature. And part of bonsai, is using like tricks of the eye, forced perspective, that
sure.
kind of stuff. And, the upright, the Chokan style, does that by tapering the trunk.
Yes.
So it's much wider at the bottom than it is at the top to kind of give you the idea that you're looking up toward a very tall tree.
Yeah. And we'll sprinkle in bits of the, sort of philosophical art behind it. But the idea is that you sort of imagine a scene in your head and then you try and make it look like that. Maybe it's something from your past. Maybe it's a great tree you saw one time on a vacation.
Right.
But just something that makes you feel good.
Right.
You're usually not like, you know, let me just make some crazy weird looking thing.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm drunk.
Or I'm going to make the, I'm going to make that tree that was next to the place where my friend got hit and killed on his bike.
No. It's all about harmony.
Yes. That would be the opposite of bonsai.
Yes. That's right. So moving on to another style, which I did not put a check mark next to, but it's okay. Mayogi.
I like this one.
It's okay. It's a little like the Chokan.
It's the informal upright.
Okay, so a little more style, maybe?
Yeah, so the Chokan is very formal, very straight. The Moyogi is, it's overall, the shape is upright.
Yeah.
But it can, like, bend and twist to get to that point. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's neat.
Yeah.
I think it's neat. I wouldn't mind doing a Moyogi at some point in the future, but it definitely won't be the first one I try.
All right, it's down the list a bit.
Yeah, it is.
The slanting, Chokan or...
Chokan.
or Fukunagashi. Fukunagashi?
Yeah, nice.
Is that good?
Yes.
These are pretty cool, I have to say. That has the leaning trunk at a 45-degree angle.
Yeah.
And the branches follow the angle of the trunk.
Yeah, they're parallel to it, right?
Yes.
Basically parallel, essentially.
Right. So those, they're neat looking.
Yeah, and that trunk is slanted, in reference to the pot.
Right.
The lip of the pot, right?
Yeah. That 45 degrees.
Right.
Yes.
And we should say, we haven't said it. So we're talking mostly about the trees and that's what gets the most attention.
Yeah.
But, classically, and at its heart, bonsai is a balance, it's a harmony between the plant and the pot.
Yeah.
Like when you're talking about a bonsai, the pot is included in that. It's
yeah,
very
it's a
important
part of it. The sculpture itself, almost.
Right. Yeah.
Agreed. And also with that slanting style, supposedly, even though I saw many examples to the contrary, the first branch is supposed to go opposite of the angle of the trunk to provide balance.
Right, I think that's in the Chokan style.
Oh, really?
It goes the opposite. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Chuck, next, Cascade.
Pretty neat, and you just lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Is this yours?
So the semi-Cascade, the Hanken guy, is mine. That's the one I'm going to try first.
All right, well, go ahead and describe it then.
So basically, and you need a deeper pot. So most pots for bonsai are shallow.
Yeah.
This you need like a pretty deep pot for because the plant is basically mostly overhanging.
Yeah.
It's outside and hanging down from the pot.
Yeah, it's
that's a
neat.
Full-on cascade. And these are meant to really emulate like a tree that's just barely hanging on and like a rocky outcrop on a mountain.
Interesting.
And so the cascade is full-on like the basically the whole plant is below the lip of the pot.
Yes.
The semi-cascade is where
the Hanken guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the there's a substantial amount of the plant is still in the pot, but it's growing over and down the side some.
That's right.
Or really off to the side. Windswept is semi-cascade, I think, is another term for it.
Yeah, now I'm trying to apply psychology to why that's your favorite.
Just the look of it. Just aesthetically speaking, I think it's great.
Next up we have the Literati. Or the Bunjin or Bunjini. Bunjingi?
I don't know. Bunjingai.
Yeah, I think that's way better, probably.
Or Gi. Bunjingi. One of those.
So
you
this
think
is...
I would ask my wife.
Sure.
You know?
We should just have Yumi in here with like a ruler smacking her knuckles. Nope. This is the one that's really focuses on perspective. So the idea here is that you're looking, from below to a tree that is above, like if you're at the base of a mountain looking up.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Then you tailor the tree to make it look as if, and we should also mention that you should look at eye level is traditionally where you're, when you talk about perspective, you know, if you're standing 4 feet above it.
Right.
That's different. You should look at bonsai eye level.
Yeah. That's why they're so frequently displayed at eye level.
That's right.
Yeah. And there's also, is probably worth mentioning here, that there's a definite front and a definite back to a bonsai.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that.
This one is one of my favorites.
Broom?
Yes, we are at the broom.
So is this the one that you marked?
The Hokidachi, yes.
Okay.
And you might look it up, people, and say, huh, interesting. Not the most flashy tree.
Right.
But there's something about it, man. It has this like really full... kind of half dome with just a single trunk jutting up.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful to me.
It's like it takes the shape of like an idealized like maple or oak tree.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it reminded me of a grand oak.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wouldn't call you flashy. You've never been known to wear like ID bracelets or pinky rings or...
I don't know what either one of those things are.
You know what a pinky ring is.
Nope.
Yes, you do.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A pinky ring. A man's pinky ring.
I know what a man is.
Okay, well, I'll show you later.
Next up is my absolute favorite by far.
Okay.
The landscape. It's when you create your little miniature scene. It's like a shadow box.
Yeah.
Which I used to love doing those when I was a kid.
My oldest sister was into this years and years ago.
Yeah.
She would make more like English gardens kind of in miniature.
Love that.
With like, you know, with like those gazing balls,
mm-hmm.
she would make like, well, a tiny one of those.
It's
the focal point of the place. And it was neat.
Yeah. So this is when you have your little nature scene. You got moss, you got little rocks, you may even have a water feature. And it's just, I don't know, man. Ever since I was a kid, I love little things like that.
So is that the first one you're going to try?
Well, I think I would probably have to work up to that.
Okay. You're not going to just do water features right out of the gate.
No, but I might. I built my own fountain once. It's not that hard.
Okay.
You just need a pump.
Nice.
And
this actually, China is still into, into bonsai, but this is the stuff that they practice called penjing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Very landscape oriented.
Yeah. I might even put a little, like a camping scene, a little fire ring.
Oh, that'd be great.
With some little guys with their acoustic guitars.
Right, and then Jason Voorhees is standing off to the side just watching them?
Maybe. Root over or root on rock.
This is the one I thought was going to be your favorite.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the deal here?
You could definitely combine this one with something like cascade or windswept.
Yeah.
It's where you train the roots of the tree to grow around or on top of a rock.
It's pretty neat.
So it looks like it is really clinging to a mountainside.
Yeah, and what they're trying to do in a lot of these cases is give the appearance of like an old tree.
You're right.
Something that's been around for many years.
Yep.
When in fact it may be a tree that's like a year old, but it looks like some ancient oak or something.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of the techniques for doing that later, but that is largely it seems like the initial point.
Yeah.
if you're trying to make it look like an old tree, or you're creating a tree that you intend to live for a few hundred years and get old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and the oldest one they have in D.C., like 400 years old?
That's not even close.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one's cool. You want to talk about that?
Sure.
So there's a white pine at the National Bonsai and Penjing Museum in D.C., and it's almost 400 years old. But also notably, it survived a pretty big event, the bombing of Hiroshima.
Yeah.
So, and then it was given as a gift from Japan to the U.S.
Why?
I don't know. I guess they were like, here, don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
Just take this thing to remind you, think twice.
Right. So there are many, many older ones than that, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah, there's one in a museum in Spain. It's a ficus that's like 1,000 years old.
Wow.
There's another one that's like 1,000. There's a couple that are 800 years old.
And the idea is that many times these are passed within your family, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very frequently they'll be handed down as heirlooms, right?
That's awesome.
Now, some of the disparity between ages where they're like, that one doesn't really count. It may have been like a 1,000-year-old ficus that somebody found out in the wild and collected and has been bonsaiing for 20 years.
Right, right.
So this one, I have the impression, has been bonsaied and in the same family for like 6 or 7 generations. So it's been like tended to.
Yeah.
So it may have been kind of old when it was collected.
Uh-huh.
But it's been bonsaied for hundreds of years.
Amazing. All right, to finish up the last category, which I think is pretty cool, multiform, or ikada, or sokan, or kabudachi. And that is when you have the illusion that you have more than one tree, but it's really just one tree.
Yeah, that's neat.
It's pretty cool. So it looks like, you know, it's generally jutting out from the bottom, obviously, of the root structure up, and it looks like a couple of trees.
Yeah.
But it's a single tree.
Some people cheat and put several trees in there, but...
Well, you can do that, right? A little, your own little forest?
I guess so, but isn't that then really the landscape? The Saikai?
Maybe. I think, you know, what are the bonsai police going to come knocking on your door?
Yeah. You don't want to mess with those guys.
No, you don't.
They'll ignore you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what kind of plants you can use, because I did not know this. I thought there was a special kind of tree that everybody used to make a bonsai.
Yeah.
But in fact, it could be a tree that out in the wild is 30 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. I thought they were little miniature trees that just grew up to be like a foot tall.
Yeah. No, apparently that's like a common misconception. I saw that during research a couple of times.
Yeah.
The whole key is you are dwarfing a tree.
Uh-huh.
And you're doing that by keeping it in a small container and keeping its roots trimmed back.
Yeah.
So that it comes to basically go against its natural processes, mm-hmm. and just stays small and miniature. But yeah, basically any plant can be bonsaied.
Crazy.
It is. And what I didn't realize is that most bonsai is meant to be outdoors.
I didn't either. I thought it was strictly indoor.
Yeah, and there are indoor varieties. Like, you can take indoor plants or plants that do well indoors and make them bonsai, and that's becoming more of a thing. But for the most part, if you're doing especially something with like a pine or a deciduous tree or a juniper, those are outdoor plants, and your bonsai is meant to stay outdoors, except, you know, if you bring it in and use it as a centerpiece or something once in a while.
Yeah, and for those trees, it makes a point in here that they have a natural yearly cycle that will be disrupted if you keep it indoors. So you may have to overwinter it to a certain degree, but you're also going to want to take these out in the winter some.
All right.
But it also says that it's not like a grown tree that's covered in mulch and like super deep rooted.
Right.
So you can't just leave it out all winter.
No. And if you do, you would want to leave it in like a cold frame or a greenhouse or something like that where it's going to survive. Or you could also protect it with a bunch of mulch too.
Yeah, sure.
If you leave it outside. But yeah, it does follow a lot of its natural processes, right? So if you're doing like a fruiting tree or a flowering tree, like as long as it's healthy and happy, it's going to bear fruit. There's going to be flowers.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. But you are simulating nature in that the roots are being kept shallow and trimmed.
Yeah.
So you have to take that into consideration by protecting it from cold and from making sure it has a lot of water too.
Yeah, we'll get into the specifics of care here in a minute. But as you said, you can pretty much use any tree. ideally what you want to use is something, some sort of tree or shrub that have small leaves or needles and that can get super dense.
Yeah.
So you just have sort of more more material to work with for your art form.
Right.
How's that?
I think it's wonderful.
And it all starts with the roots, right?
Yeah, so when you're looking for a specimen, you can just go to like your local nursery. Some people grow stuff from seed.
Mm-hmm.
You can also take cuttings and grow them in like rooting hormone or something like
Man,
that.
Man, if you start from seed, that's like...
That's neat.
That's dedication.
Sure.
And I will also say that if you start with a kit that has a bonsai already sort of shaped for you,
yeah,
that's fine. I'm not going to knock it too much because you might not have time and you might still want to tinker with it.
That's a good point.
But I would recommend like to get your full experience and maybe start with a cutting that you kind of grow as your own little baby.
Right. Or you can go to like a nursery or something like that and just say, I would like to buy this plant and I'm going to turn it into a bonsai.
True.
That definitely counts as well.
Yeah.
So, a really good one to start with that I found is, a juniper.
Uh-huh.
Most junipers, they grow as ground covers, so they stay fairly low to the ground normally.
Yeah.
So they do well being miniaturized. They're also pretty hardy plants from what I understand.
Right.
And they grow really well in any temperate climate.
Yeah.
Relatively temperate climate. So you go to a nursery and you want to kind of go already with the style in mind that you're going to go with, whether it's broom or whether it's windswept or semi-cascade or whatever.
Sure.
Because then you'll be able to kind of narrow down the plant that you want to buy because it's already going to – you're almost seeing it in there, like, you know how sculptors say that they like look at a piece of marble and they're just chipping away
from
what was already in there all along.
Uh-huh.
It's very similar with bonsai as well.
Yeah.
So you go in, you find the plant that kind of suits your needs a little bit. And then, you dig down and you want to find the first roots that come off of the trunk. And that's what's called the crown, right?
That's right.
And as long as those are pretty healthy looking and intact, it's probably a pretty good bet that you can turn that thing into a bonsai.
That's right. And you should remember, too, that the more you want to alter the tree, the probably younger and smaller it should be to begin with.
Right.
Because you can only do so much. You know, you can't take a tree that's like stick straight and be like, all right, now I want it to cascade all the way back down.
You might be able to, but it would take decades to get it to grow like that.
I would say you'd have to be a bonsai master.
Yeah, you would.
In order to do that.
Again, like Mr. Miyagi.
But these exposed roots, it's going to give the appearance, if you want to have that age look like it's an ancient tree, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient trees usually have these great big roots that you see sort of on top of the ground.
Right, exactly.
So that's a neat thing you can do with your bonsai.
Yep. Plus also what's great when you dig down to those top roots that form the crown where the trunk ends and the real roots begin. There's going to be plenty of feeder roots above that.
Yeah.
And you're actually going to want to trim those away, but it gives what was once a pretty short plant suddenly has a trunk now. And you're like, oh, okay. Wow. I see where this is coming from.
Uh-huh.
It's starting to take shape just right out of the gate.
Yeah. And what you're doing, we'll talk about pruning in a bit, but how you're shaping this is with wire. Either with like aluminum or copper wiring that you can leave on to bend the tree to your will up to like a year. But you want to be careful and not make it too tight because it can actually cut into the tree, which you don't want at all. And so you keep an eye on your wiring. And the idea is that, again, with harmony, you don't want a mess of branches obscuring one another. You want each branch to have sort of its own personality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about how to start a bonsai?
Let's.
Okay. So you go in, you find your plant. And by the way, we're going to kind of give you a step by step, but I found a really good website called bonsaiforbeginners.com.
Uh-huh.
And they have a really, really good, really well written, even though there's lots of misspelled words, but just, it's really understandable.
Is four the number four?
That's like F-O-R-E.
Oh.
No, Bonsai for Beginners. Wow, yeah, I don't remember if it is the number four. I don't think it is.
Okay.
Just look it up.
Sure.
And if it's somebody from New Zealand writing, you found the right one. But they basically have a great step-by-step of how to do it.
All right, so you want to buy a tree. A good time of the year to do this is to go in the spring when the the growing cycle begins, and go to your nursery. And, like you said, you're looking for whatever tree that fits your mind's eye of what you eventually want. And it says in here to start with your scene and work toward that.
Right.
I think I would be more inclined to sort of freeform it a little bit, you know, over the years.
Okay.
Which I'm sure is fine.
You're going to be the bad boy of the bonsai world, aren't you?
Maybe so. You never know what I'm going to do next.
Exhibitions wearing like a motorcycle jacket.
Possibly. So the price is going to vary depending on what kind of tree you're getting. And of course I looked up the kits. They're, you know, they can be 50 to a couple hundred bucks.
Right.
Depending on the kind of tree and like how finished looking it is.
Right. Or, I mean, like you can go spend 10 to 20 on like a juniper.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of bonsai tools that you can buy. The internet will be happy to take your money for that. But you can also make do with other stuff like florist's wire. You can get the copper wire you need from probably a hardware store.
Yeah. Pliers.
Pliers.
Scissors.
Scissors. Smaller the better.
Sure. Like those little first grade scissors.
Exactly.
With the round ends.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you're also going to want like a root rake, which you can just bend a fork and bam, you got a root rake.
Boom.
So you've got your plant, or we're saying it's a juniper. You're going to dig down. You're going to basically take it out, put it on the table in front of you. You want a spray bottle of water.
You're going to take a shot of sake.
Right. Get started.
Traditionally.
Exactly. Uh-huh. You go, whoa. And then you get started. So you take the dirt off of the top layer all the way down to the crown. And again, there's a bunch of feeder roots, which you want to trim from the trunk itself. And then you take a look at the roots. Like you scrape the dirt away and you really look at the root structure and you say, I got to get rid of a lot of this.
Yeah. And you should already have your pot at this point, by the way.
Right.
Because this is the first step is the potting.
Right. And I've seen people usually, especially beginners, make the mistake when they're first creating a bonsai that they go real small with the pot.
Sure.
You're going to go through a couple of pots in the first few years. So they say don't be afraid to use a big pot. As a matter of fact, you should probably use a bigger pot than you think you should for its first pots. Eventually, 3 or 4 years down the road, you're going to finally come to that one pot that this thing stays in for the rest of its life.
Yep.
And you're going to repot it every couple of years, but you're going to repot it in the same pot.
Yeah, you're going to be at a flea market, and it's going to just, there's going to be a golden light shining around this one pot.
Yep.
And you're going to say, that thing's $20.
Yeah, and James Brown's going to be like, do you see the light?
And then you'll talk him down to $14 and then up to $17, and then you'll meet at the middle at $15.
Nice.
And then you've got your pot.
That'll be a great day.
All right, so you're at the roots, I think.
Yeah, so when you trim the roots away, I was really surprised by this. You want to trim about two-thirds of the roots present on your plant when you buy it.
Yeah, it even says in here, this seems extreme, but don't fret.
No. And the roots you really want to go after are the bigger ones, mm-hmm. the more established ones. You want to leave some at the top, at that crown, but especially if you're dealing with a tree and it has a tap root, that root that goes like straight down.
Yeah.
That's actually not as much for watering as it is for stability, and you don't need it in your tiny little shallow pot. So you want to get rid of roots like that.
Yep. You've got your pot. You want to put a little thin layer of gravel for drainage.
And that's another big thing. Your pot has to have drainage holes.
Oh, yeah.
Good ones.
Yeah, you're the lawn watering expert.
You don't want a quarter inch of water over it just standing.
All right, so you've got your pot. You've got your gravel down there. You've trimmed your roots, and you need your soil mixture.
Yeah, this is a big one.
It's a big one, and there are different schools of thought on what kind of soil. It says in here equal parts sand, peat, and loam.
Yeah, I guess that's like a general generic like go-to bonsai soil.
But you want soil specific to your tree.
Right. Like if you have a juniper, that's going to probably be different soil than what like a olive tree needs.
Yeah.
And so you just need to find out about the plant that you're bonsaiing and find out what kind of soil it likes, how much water it needs, what kind of nutrients it takes, and what kind of sunlight it needs especially.
That's right.
It's a big one.
So you stick that sucker in there. You've got your trimmed roots, and you want to spread them out really evenly, toward the edges of the pot.
Yeah.
Of the container.
Right. through, like, just all throughout the container, you want the roots going down.
Yeah, and I don't think we mentioned you should run a wire up through the drainage hole to support the tree initially.
Yeah, this is a big one.
Yeah.
And this wire, this is it's going to support the tree, but also if you're going to bend the tree, say you're doing a cascade or a semi-cascade or anything like that.
Yeah, or a loop-de-loop.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You're going to use that wire you're going to go train it around the trunk.
Yeah.
And then bend the wire, and it's going to bend the poor plant with it. And you're going to leave it on there for like a month or so at least.
Yeah.
But you want to keep a really close eye on it because the tree will start to grow around it and it will be forever scarred. And as far as bonsai is concerned, you've just ruined your plant.
Yep.
So you want to keep a close eye on it. You want to make it tight, but you want to make it tight enough so that when you bend it, it's going to bend the tree with it.
Right.
But not so tight that it bites into or damages the tree.
That's right.
And, you want to keep a really close eye on it to make sure the tree doesn't grow. And then when it's done after a month, maybe longer, this article says up to a year, but I didn't see that anywhere else. You want to clip it away. Like, you're not going to unwind it or else you're probably just going to break your bonsai.
Right. And hopefully your tree won't go boing, boing, boing and pop back into place.
And if it does, you just have to redo it again.
Patience, my friend.
Patience.
That's right. They say in the article, patience is the best tool that you can have in your arsenal.
Right. So you get the wire sticking up through the drainage hole now.
That's right. And, as far as the soil, you want it to be, you want to tap it and kind of, you know, shake the pot around to remove the air pockets. Firm it around the base of the tree, but you don't want it so packed in that, you know, the water's got to go through and drain all the way through and out.
Right. Well, you want well-draining soil. One thing I saw was three parts potting soil to one part, like, miniature gravel, basically.
Yeah.
So the soil's going to drain well. Apparently, you do want it kind of packed because that tree does not have stability with its roots, so it's going to rely on the dirt more than it normally would.
Yeah, especially around the trunk.
Right. You want to shake it to get the air pockets out for sure.
That's right.
A lot of people also put additional gravel on top to keep the dirt in place when it's watered.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and it looks nice too.
Agreed. So you don't want to do that and then go throw it out in the full sun all day long in July. What you want to do is start it in a shady spot for about a week and let it get used to being shorter rooted and in a weird new container.
Right.
And let it accept the fact that it, I know I'm going to be small.
This is going to hurt.
I'm going to be small. I'm never going to be a big daddy.
Yeah.
And once it gets over that and accepts its fate, and it says, you know what? I actually like this because I'm going to be a beautiful work of art and get lots of care and attention.
Yep.
Now you can move me into the sun a little bit at a time. A
couple hours at a time, maybe?
Yeah, sir or ma'am. Thank you, master. And,
sensei.
Yeah, sensei. And then, a couple of hours in the morning. And then before you know it, you can have that bad boy out there, like weathering all kinds of weather. Weathering the weather.
Normal weather.
Yeah.
Like it normally would. Yeah. And your plant's going to tell you whether it's happy or not happy. I think with bonsai in particular, you're going to notice like every little change in your plant.
Sure.
Because you're really concentrating on it and focusing on it.
Mm-hmm. And all the rest of your plants are going to hate you.
Yeah.
You're going
to be like, remember me?
Yeah.
Your spider plant's going to be like growing around your throat.
Yeah.
Just closing off your airway.
Yep.
So watch out for your spider plant.
Agreed.
I should say one more thing, Chuck. When you first pot your plant, the first watering,
mm-hmm.
you should basically take it in like a tray or a pan or a bucket of water
yeah.
and submerge it to the soil level and just let it sit there.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
All right.
This is what I've seen. Don't like plunk it in there.
Yeah.
Slowly submerge it in there. And that water is going to make sure that every root gets its water
mm-hmm.
and, it's going to fill in any air pockets that are in there. So it's really going to basically solidify your, soil
okay.
and pack it in. And just get it ready.
Very nice.
Pretty neat, right?
Super neat. Should we take a break?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about bonsai care and shaping, which is where the money is.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
So, Chuck, you got your bonsai.
Yep.
You are, you've moved it back out into the sunlight. It's basically accepted its fate as a smaller version of itself.
Yeah. You've named it.
Right.
Right? No?
Yeah. Alan.
Okay. Mine's Roy.
Nice. So, Alan and Roy, the bonsai twins, are hanging out outside.
Uh-huh.
When you first pot it, you can also prepare the limbs, too. Where you're basically trimming the limbs back, one going. So remember, there's one in the front. There's a front and a back to it, right?
Yeah, which you should establish and stick to.
Right. Typically with bonsai, in traditional bonsai, the first limb is about a third of the way up from the dirt.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to jut out to the right.
Okay.
Second one is going to jut out the opposite direction, but it's not going to be even with the other one. It's going to be another about third of the way up.
Okay.
You rarely want, limbs even with one another. It's called a bar.
That's unsightly.
Exactly. So the next one juts out the opposite direction. And then the third one is about another third of the way up, and that juts out towards the back.
Right.
So it gives the impression of distance, of perspective.
Yeah, and balance.
By having it growing out the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Balance and harmony.
And you do this by, you can take that same wire, different lighter wire, depending on the size of the limb, and bend them in the ways that you want. But more often than not, you're going to be creating these illusions or this pattern by trimming your bonsai. And like you said, this is where the money is. This is where, when you think of bonsai, this is what I think of, little Japanese people like trimming the limbs off of tiny plants.
Yeah. And it's, again, you're striving to make it look like something larger that you would find in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you could get super weird and avant-garde with your form and your shape. But in general, traditionally, you want it to take a form that you would find out in the wild somewhere.
Yeah.
Just on a smaller scale.
But that's the effect of wind, of sun,
yeah,
of weird weather, of poor soil, of just the weirder looking the tree out in nature.
Uh-huh.
Basically, the harder the life it's had. And you're trying to recreate that,
yeah,
through nurturing.
Pretty
which
neat.
Is kind of counterintuitive.
Uh-huh.
But if you just stop and think about what you're looking at in nature that you're trying to emulate,
yeah,
you'll probably figure out different ways to do it. And if you haven't figured it out, somebody's probably been doing it for 1,000 years already, and you can go get yourself a book or look on the internet to,
right,
find a technique.
Yeah, so like you said with the wind, like the real tree in real life that's on the mountaintop,
mm-hmm,
the wind is trying to kill it.
Right.
And it's leaning out over the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, my days are numbered. but you nurture that in your own bonsai,
yeah,
and you emulate that, and it's, I don't know, I like the idea of it for some reason.
It's neat.
It's like a tribute almost.
It's an homage to that tree that's hanging on by a root.
Yeah. When it comes to light, you want to rotate it around. You don't want it getting the same side exposure to sunlight mm-hmm. every single day. You want to rotate it around. You want to keep an eye out for bugs and insects.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you're paying attention to your bonsai more than your other plants. So you're going to notice, like, if it suddenly has an insect infestation.
Yeah, a little larva, what are they called? Spittle bugs, mm-hmm. black or red dots of mites. It says you can brush these away. I imagine you could smash them with a framing hammer if you wanted after you brush them off.
Right.
I bet in the Japanese bonsai tradition, you're probably brushing them away with a little paintbrush.
Right.
Like you go and go hit the spider plant.
Hey, spiders are okay, man. They eat the little bugs for you.
Oh, the spider plant, I mean.
Oh, the spider plant. I see. Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to watch out for that thing. It's trying to kill you and your whole family.
Exactly. So that's where you need to funnel your spittle bugs.
Well, watering is another big one, too. You, depending on how hot it is outside, you may end up needing to water your bonsai like 2 times a day.
Yeah.
Which means if you're into bonsai, you probably don't leave your house very much. You most likely want to water your bonsai every day, depending on, again, the plant. But most bonsai needs watering every single day.
Yeah.
And twice on hot days.
Yeah. And what you don't want is, you know, as you're paying attention to it, you don't want a soggy, boggy, base. Where
no,
your soil is.
That's a really bad sign. That means you probably didn't put down enough gravel on the bottom.
Yep.
Or your soil mix doesn't have enough gravel or whatever mixed in to make it drain quickly.
That's right.
Because it's tough to overwater a well-draining potted plant of any type, including bonsai.
True. You're probably going to be doing more pruning early on in the life of the bonsai. And once it has that general shape that you like, that's when you're doing, just the subtle changes that probably mean a lot to you, but other friends that come over at, you know, happy hour, they'll just say, hey, nice tree.
Nice bonsai.
Yeah. You out of ice. And they don't realize
maker's broken.
They don't realize all the subtle little, you know, you might clip away one, you know, a half of an inch of a branch to you that makes it just perfect.
Yeah.
That other people would probably not even notice.
Yeah. That's why it's your bonsai.
That's right, Josh.
That's why I was thinking about it, like giving the gift of a bonsai to somebody.
Yeah.
That you've tended to for years and years and years. That's a significant gift.
Yeah. It's like, and here's my daughter.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Well, not really, but you know what I mean.
You can marry this plant.
You love it so much. Why don't you marry it?
You're also going to keep up with the fertilizer. Again, like this is almost such a generic overview in some places that I feel bad even saying it, but just go find out what the plant that you're raising needs normally.
And do that.
Do that.
Yeah.
But again, you have to bear in mind that it's slightly different because you're keeping it in miniature. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have its normal root system. It needs more water than usual. And, it's probably because you're watering it so much, the nutrients in the soil are going to leach out much more quickly.
Yeah.
So you need to fertilize it more than you would just if you were growing it normally in a container, right?
Right.
So since you're fertilizing something more usually, the rule of thumb is you want to fertilize something weekly.
Uh-huh.
So weekly,
right.
Weekly.
Sure.
And that way you're constantly replenishing the nutrients in the soil, but you're not going to like burn or scorch the roots with like a chemical burn by overfeeding it.
Yeah. And again, you pointed out earlier, but I think it bears in mind repeating, the key is repotting and trimming those roots every couple of years.
Yeah.
And like you said, once you find the pot at the flea market that you fell in love with, you can keep it in that pot forever as long as it's, you know, the one you want to stay with. I mean, you can do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But, Or give it as a gift. But as you keep trimming these roots back, it's going to stay that size. If you forget about it, if you're a hoarder and you're drunk and you pass out for 10 years, you're going to wake up with a 12 foot oak tree in your living room.
Yeah. That's the story of Pappy Van Winkle. I guess that is true, isn't it? Because, yeah, you're basically once it becomes established to the shape it you want it. Mm-hmm. You're just basically pruning it back here or there, keeping it trimmed. And then when you repot it every couple of years, like the whole point is to keep the root system in check, huh?
Yeah.
So if you didn't do that, yeah, it would just start
to grow.
Well,
it would die is what it would do.
Nobody would water it.
There'd be so many roots in a pot that doesn't fit them.
It'd probably look cool. It'd be growing over it.
Maybe.
And that's basic stuff that we've been talking about, but there is a lot of advanced things you can do too. And one of those is like, again, training it to grow over rocks. So like when you potted the bonsai, you would want a bonsai with really long roots. So that you could, when you're potting it, you would actually place it on a rock and then wire the roots in place.
Yeah.
To let them start to establish in the pot. Just things like that. There's something called, gin, which is basically, this is really neat. I'll bet you saw it. Did you see a lot of bonsai that had like dead wood exposed?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So gin is where at the top of the trunk or at the ends of limbs, dead wood is exposed to just really play up how old this thing is supposed to be or actually is.
Right.
There's something called shari, which is dead wood on the trunk below.
Cool.
And then there's something called, sabamiki. And that's like, you actually get in there and peel away the bark, drill into the trunk.
Whoa.
And carve holes into it, carve like a gap into it to create the illusion that it was scarred from like a lightning strike.
Wow.
And you got to be really careful doing that because you can very easily kill your bonsai.
Yeah.
But if you do it right, it'll grow back and scar around it and you'll have a pretty interesting looking tree.
So that's not recommended for beginners.
I would not think so.
Yeah.
I think you'd kill a lot of plants doing that way. So, and again, people have been trying this stuff for a couple thousand years now. So
yeah.
There's a lot of different stuff you can do and a lot of different resources out there.
Nice.
Yeah. Go to your local Japantown and say, teach me.
Yeah. And you know what? If the movie
Karate Kid?
Lost in Translation is true, then if you're a pretty American girl, you can wander into any Japanese ceremony and they will just accept you with open arms.
Yeah, that's what they're known for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably so, right?
To
a certain degree?
Sure.
Aren't you not a jerk?
Well, yeah.
Like, what did she walk into? Was hers origami or was that bonsai? I don't remember.
I don't remember. Was it a wedding?
No, Scarlett Johansson walked
in. Was it outdoors?
There were these Japanese women doing some, it was either bonsai or origami or something. And they were like, oh, well, you know, come on in and let me show you our ancient ways.
Yeah, I don't remember that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was neat.
That is neat.
Great movie.
I like that movie a lot, too. Isn't the legend around it that Bill Murray's actually playing himself? Like, it's based on an experience Sofia Coppola had?
Yeah, I bet it's not too far off.
And so, like, Giovanni Ribisi is Spike Jones.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Scarlett Johansson is Sofia Coppola.
Yep.
Anna Faris is Cameron Diaz.
Yep, I heard that.
That one dude is Justin Timberlake.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, this actually supposedly happened.
Yeah.
But then everyone says, well, who's Bill Murray playing? Allegedly, Bill Murray is playing himself.
That makes sense.
I mean,
we'll never know what he whispers at the end either.
Yeah.
Which I love.
That was a great movie. I forgot about that one.
Make it Santori time.
Yeah.
She's a part of my 100% club. Sofia Coppola.
What is that?
The directors who made nothing but great movies.
I think I've only seen that and The Virgin Suicides.
Great movie.
What else has she made?
She did The Bling Ring recently.
Never saw it.
Really good.
Really?
Don't be turned off by the title.
Yeah, because I have been.
And she did the one with Stephen Dorff. Oh, I can't remember where he's the actor just sort of holed up in the Chateau Marmont.
Before Daylight.
With his daughter. No.
Before Sunrise.
Nope.
Before Tomorrow.
Nope. And she did the one, Let Them Eat Cake, Marie Antoinette movie with Kirsten Dunst. It was fantastic.
I never saw that one either.
Yeah, they're all great. I think she's top notch.
I'll check them out. If you want to know more about bonsai or Sofia Coppola, you can type those words in the search bar at HowStuffWorks.com. And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
Yes. I'm going to call this Tornado Miss.
Already? That thing just came out today.
I know, man. And you know what? I hope everyone's all right because there are tornadoes like kind of all over the place today.
Yeah, I heard Oklahoma's got
Kansas. Hey guys, love the show. You mentioned Tornado Miss episode that I bet you would get an email from a civil engineer, and here I am. Just wanted to share an interesting fact about designing wind-resistant buildings. I remember the day of the 2008 downtown Atlanta tornado you mentioned because it was actually the last day of classes at Georgia Tech before I went home to Florida for spring break. Ironically, I just learned in one of my classes that one reason most skyscrapers are not the same basic shape from top to bottom is to alleviate pressure from wind. In the same class, a professor had mentioned that one of the absolute worst structural designs for a skyscraper is a perfect cylinder, which is what our Peachtree Plaza is that had the windows up for so long.
Yeah.
It's a cylinder. The wind whips all around and ends up hitting the entire face of the building as a giant wall of force rather than hitting the building at different places over time. Not ideal for a glass tube of a building. Anyway, thought you guys would find that interesting. You are the best thing to come out of Athens, in my Georgia Tech opinion.
Oh, wow. I see where that was going.
Keep up the good work, and that is from Scooter Sheldon.
Thanks a lot, Scooter. Scooter Sheldon.
I don't know about the best thing to come out of Athens.
There's
a couple of bands and beers and coffees and
players. I'm going with Scooter's take.
All right.
Thank you, Scooter. If you want to give us high praise like Scooter did, we're always down with that. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can post cool stuff on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can find us on Instagram at SYSK Podcast, for real. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. As always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.